And now, a special appearance from Lila the Bernese Mountain Dog. And that was a special appearance from Lila the Bernese Mountain Dog. Folks, I apologize for that disgusting language that Lila just said. Absolutely inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable and uncalled for. If I had known she had a mouth like that, I never would have put her on the air. Once again, I apologize.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Act Podcast. It is Saturday, June 22nd, the year of our Lord Tim Tebow, 2019. Well, it's been a busy week. It's been a busy week for me and really for all of my followers. I made some national news with one of my trolls that I did. As everybody knows, that Man Boob Gate is sweeping the country, and it's really one of the greatest stories in the history of the United States. If you've been living under a rock and you somehow don't know what happened, I forget what day it was. It was the 18th of June, so it was last week, some point. I made a fake tweet there was a story about, there was a lot of drama between Chris Paul and James Harden, and I found this to be a perfect time to strike and try and fool people by exaggerating some shit that went on. And it worked to perfection. I pretended to be Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski, and I said that Chris Paul made fun of James Harden for having man boobs, and that James Harden had to leave the practice facility because he was crying. And it worked, and it got about, I don't know, 30,000 retweets, 30,000 likes. And I was like, okay, that was a good troll. And I got a few verified checks to bite, and it was like, okay, that was a good troll. It was nice. And so the next morning, I wake up, and I wake up to like 50 notifications telling me that Skip Bayless, everybody knows who Skip Bayless is. Skip Bayless went on national television and was reporting that tweet as like it was true. And he was talking about man boobs. And so it just exploded into this national phenomenon of man boobs. And Skip Bayless fell for a troll account. And everybody was talking about it, from the New York Post to the Dan Patrick Show, radio shows all across the country. It was just hilarious. But the story wasn't over there. It wasn't over yet, because the next day I found a video of Chris Paul actually like grabbing James Harden's boobs, and the story is just never ending. Man Boob Gate is a never ending story, and we have to get to the bottom of this, because it's one thing to make fun of a player's game or to make fun of whether or not they suck, but it's another thing to make jokes about their man boobs, and that's disgusting, and that's where it draws the line. And as a person with man boobs, I find it personally very offensive that Chris Paul would do something like that. But James Harden is not innocent in this either, because James Harden reportedly, or at least what I reported, I don't know if it's true or not, but I reported it, that James Harden used to fart in Chris Paul's face on team flights, and it gave Chris Paul pink eye. And this was in the thread. This was in a thread with the man boob. It was right under the man boob tweet. This was the very next tweet. So I don't know how anybody could miss it, but I just kept making it more ridiculous and ridiculous and ridiculous, and somehow Skip Bayless fell for it. But a part of me, I'm putting on my tinfoil hat, you know, my conspiracy hat here. A part of me thinks that Skip Bayless knew it was fake, and the only reason he went with it is because he knew it would generate a lot of headlines because of how stupid it is. So, but either way, hey, I'll take the free publicity. It was hilarious. And it was really, really, it was a good time. It was the complete opposite of a tough scene. It really was. And the weirdest part about all this is this was coming like, I don't know, less than 12 hours after OJ fucking Simpson literally liked one of my tweets. And everybody knows that in the last week, OJ Simpson has gotten a Twitter account. So it's like, all right, so 12 hours, like I'm going to bed, and somebody tells me, hey man, OJ Simpson liked one of your tweets. And I see they like one of my tweets, and then not even 12 hours later, one of my tweets is, like, making national news because it fooled Skip Bayless. Like, there's no other platform where you can go from O.J. Simpson liking one of your tweets to causing a national firestorm because you got Skip Bayless to talk about man boobs on national television. It's ridiculous. And this isn't even my final form, folks. This isn't even my final form. And, excuse me, I'm getting a call. Hold on. Hello? Hey, OJ, what's going on, man? Yeah? Yeah, Yeah, I have no problem with that. Of course, I have no problem with you babysitting my kids. I mean, you're the only man to ever rush for 2,000 yards in a 14-game season. Why would I have a problem with you babysitting my kids? I mean, you were the best running back in the NFL in the 1970s. It would be an honor if you were able to babysit my kids. Yep. I have absolutely no issue. Okay, I'll see you later. About 9 o'clock? 9 o'clock. All right. All right, bye. Anyway, where was I? It's been, like I said, it's been a whirlwind week. I never expected this to, by this, I mean my account to grow to the point where I was fooling commentators on national television about man boobs. That was really my magnum opus at this point. But probably the only thing that could probably top this is if I get Donald Trump to retweet or respond to one of my troll tweets that I do on his replies. That would probably be the only thing at this point that could top making Skip Bayless go on national television and talk about man boobs. Just because political Twitter, and I touched on this before, political Twitter is just an entirely different animal from sports Twitter. I mean, it's not even close. Like, the worst, the most depraved and deluded members of sports Twitter don't even hold a candle to what political Twitter has going on. I mean, that's where you see the serious whack jobs. And if I'm able to get Trump to fall for one of my tweets, that would be like man boob gate times 1,000. It really would. So that's probably a pipe dream, though. But hey, you never know. You never know, so it's worth trying. In real sports news, we have a trade to talk about, and that is the Anthony Davis trade to the Lakers. And it's surprising and not surprising in one swoop because, like, Anthony Davis has tried to get traded to the Lakers really for the last, I don't know, 6 months. Like, we've known since, like, the All-Star break that he was trying to get to the Lakers. So it wasn't surprising. And in order to get Anthony, the big thing is, and this is always funny to me, is people are like, oh my God, did the Lakers give away too much for Anthony Davis? And I just have one thing to say to that. Fuck no, okay? No, they didn't give away too much for Anthony Davis, all right? They gave away Lonzo Ball, who is an injury-prone. He plays hard, he's injury-prone, and he cannot shoot the fucking basketball at all. He cannot shoot a fucking basketball, okay? He's a solid role player at best. They gave away Brandon Ingram, who admittedly showed a lot of potential towards the end of the season before he had his blood clot issues. But still, Brandon Ingram or Anthony Davis, that's an easy decision. You go with Anthony Davis. They traded away Josh Hart, who's a scrub. He sucks. 3 first-round draft picks. Now, tell yourself, what are the chances that those 3 first-round draft picks are going to become better than Anthony Davis? Slim to none. Especially since, now that the Lakers have Anthony Davis and LeBron James, those draft picks are going to be like late first round, so they're not even going to be worth a lot. And the 4th overall selection in the 2019 draft, which was a pretty weak draft after really the top 2. So, did they give away too much for Anthony Davis? No, they didn't. They didn't, all right? Anthony Davis is one of the, top 6 or 7 basketball players in the world. He's just entering his prime. He's not even 27 years old yet. So, yeah, you go and you get him. And they got LeBron, they got Anthony Davis, they have cap space, and now the real question for the Lakers is, are they going to go the route of a third star, or are they going to try and fill out their roster with depth? And I think it all depends on, really, what Kawhi Leonard does. Because, I mean, obviously, if you can get Kawhi to pair with LeBron and Anthony Davis, you go and you do it. But if Kawhi goes to the Clippers or some other team, really, that leaves you with, Kyrie is basically dead set on going to the Nets, so he's probably not going to go to the Lakers. Durant, his Achilles just exploded a few weeks ago, so he's not going to be playing for a while. Klay Thompson's going to be staying in Golden State. So really, you got guys like Kemba Walker and Jimmy Butler are the quote-unquote next stars. And I'm not a fan of Kemba Walker's game. I know he's a fan favorite because he kind of falls into that Allen Iverson tier where he's small and he has nice handles. He does a nice crossover, but he's not efficient. He's never really been on a winning team. He's never won a playoff series in 8 years. I'm not a big fan of Kemba Walker's game. I think Jimmy Butler would be nice because he provides defense that Walker wouldn't. And for the love of God, Lakers, please do not fucking bring back D'Angelo Russell. I swear to God, you cannot bring back D'Angelo Russell. And for some reason, D'Angelo Russell has a fucking huge fan base, and he fucking sucks. Okay? He stinks. He's basura. He's garbage. I don't know how. And everybody comes up with excuses for him. Since D'Angelo Russell came into the league 4 years ago, he has the fourth worst plus-minus in the entire league. Even last year with the Nets, the Nets were 67 points worse with him on the court. He doesn't get to the foul line. He's inefficient scoring. He's not exactly a great passer either. He's a horrible defender. Like, he's a high-volume guy who needs the ball a lot. And even with the ball a lot last year in Brooklyn, his stats, they were good, I guess. But they weren't, considering how much he used the ball, his usage percentage, weren't very good, weren't impressive. And he was dog shit in the playoffs. He had more shot attempts than points in the playoffs. So, no, I don't want him anywhere near the Lakers. Especially, excuse me, you're going to be bringing back a guy. There's a reason you got rid of him in the first place. It's because he's not very good, despite the fact that he was an all-star. Okay? So, I pray the Lakers do not bring back D'Angelo Russell, because that would be a big mistake. Here, the one thing that you have to be concerned about with Anthony Davis, and the comparisons between Chris Bosh and Kevin Love are inevitably going to come up, because you're talking about a star, power forward or a star big man who in his prime is joining up to play with LeBron James. And it's the success or the lack of team success that Davis, Bosh, and Love had before joining up with LeBron is similar, but you can't be fooled. I mean, Anthony Davis is he's on a level that Chris Bosh and Kevin Love never were. So, I mean, those comparisons between Davis, Bosh, and Love, they look good on the surface, but I mean, anybody who's ever watched three of them play knows that Davis is by far the best of the three. However, the one issue with Anthony Davis is that he's kind of like he's kind of like Ben Roethlisberger, except minus the rape. But he's like Ben Roethlisberger in the fact that he gets injured a lot, but he's never really had a season-ending injury. He gets nicked up a lot, and he misses about like 15 games a year on average. And he goes to the locker room about 20 times a year with a sore finger. Like, no, that shit's not going to fly in Los Angeles with playing with LeBron. Like, you're going to have to up your pain threshold. Okay, you can't go to the locker room in the middle of of the fourth quarter of a close game because your toenail feels sore. Like, you can't, that's not going to fly. So Anthony Davis, the one concern that you have with him is that he's going to have to up his pain threshold. You can't be going to the locker room mid-game 20 times a game. You can get away with that shit in New Orleans in one of the smallest markets that nobody cares about. But you can't get away with that under the bright lights in LA with all the media attention on you because you're with LeBron now. And speaking of New Orleans, we talk about the NBA draft. I mean, everybody, the NBA draft was on Thursday, and I mean, everybody knew really for since the draft lottery happened that Zion was going to go first overall. And that's exactly what happened. The Pelicans picked Zion first overall. And let me just say, that's a total fucking bummer because, like, New Orleans is one of the smallest markets in the NBA. And it would have been so much better when you have a generational talent like Zion to go to a bigger market than that. And the argument is, if Zion, you know, well, Cleveland wasn't a big market, but LeBron went there. And you know, Zion's phenomenal, but he's not LeBron James. Let's get that right out of the way. And I know the comparisons are going to be there because they're both super physical freaks. But no, Zion is not better. He's not on LeBron James's level. LeBron is one of the true transcendent superstars that no matter where he goes, he's going to be the center of attention. Zion isn't there. So it's disappointing that he had to go to a small market like the Pelicans. But hey, as a true basketball fan, I'm still going to watch him play. It's going to be interesting to see how that lineup merges together because they got Lonzo. They got, obviously, Zion. They have Brandon Ingram. They got Josh Hart. They have, you know, Drew Holiday. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I don't know. That lineup seems to lack shooting. But, again, we haven't been to free agency yet, so... That's just kind of a cautious starting five that I just reeled off. We don't know what's going to happen with Julius Randle. Are they going to bring back Julius Randle? Who knows? After Zion in the draft, Ja Morant from Murray State went second overall to the Grizzlies, basically as a replacement for Mike Conley, who just got traded to the Jazz. Look, I'm not going to pretend to be here. I'm not going to pretend to be a college basketball expert because I don't really watch a lot of college basketball. To me, it's basically just watching two groups of kids go up to the park and shoot bricks for 40 minutes. That's basically what college basketball is to me. Just by looking at Ja Morant, I mean, he obviously has a lot of athleticism, but he literally, his arms are, he's built like a twig. So he's going to have to get a lot stronger to survive in the NBA. After Morant went RJ Barrett, third overall to the Knicks, which is just complete essential Knicks, because I literally tweeted back in January that the Knicks were going to get like a lottery pick and end up selecting RJ Barrett. And I was spot on the money. I was off by one pick. I said the Knicks would get the fourth overall pick. They ended up getting the third overall pick, but it just like watching RJ Barrett in college, and Duke is really like one of the few teams I did watch a little bit because they had Zion last year. And because of that, I saw RJ Barrett play a lot. And I was never impressed by RJ Barrett. He was like a high volume, low efficiency. He's kind of like, he's a little bit like D'Angelo Russell, like a guy who like just a lot, his per game averages look nice, but that's because he's shooting a lot. He doesn't really do anything well. Like nothing he did impressed me. He wasn't a great 3-point shooter. He wasn't good at 2 points. His turnover to assist ratio wasn't impressive. Like, nothing he did was just very impressive. So, I think him going to the Knicks is perfect because the Knicks are just like a never-ending story of sadness. Basically, ever since I can remember, ever since I started watching basketball, like in the early 2000s, basically for the last 20 years almost, the Knicks have always been dog shit, with the exception of, you know, 1 or 2 years. So, like, everything that can go wrong for the Knicks is going to go wrong. That's just the rules of life. Just like everything is going to go in Tom Brady's favor in big games, the exact opposite is true for the Knicks. It's the exact opposite of a lucky horseshoe. All right, and basically after RJ Barrett went, they had a lot of guys like that I'd never really heard of or seen play outside of maybe the NCAA tournament, guys like DeAndre Hunter, Darius Garland, Jarrett Culver, Coby White, Jackson Hayes. Yada, yada, yada. Like, there was nothing really... Again, this wasn't a very deep draft by most experts. One of the highlights of the night, though, was me pretending to be Woj again and making up fake foreign names. Because every year in the draft, really about around... From, you know, the second round on, there are always about 6 or 7 foreign dudes with really, really weird names that get drafted that nobody's ever heard of before. So I was like, all right, I'm going to try and take advantage of this and try and make up a name. So I went with I Will Suck Your Cock Off. From, I think I said Bosnia and Herzegovina or some fucking foreign country. I don't know. And I, so I tweeted it as Woj, and some people did fall for it. I Will Suck Your Cock Off. Like, oh my goodness. Oh, it's perfect. It was perfect. And it got, I got one verified account to bite on that. It was just hilarious. It was perfect. The other fun draft story late in the draft was Bol Bol, the son of former NBA, the late NBA shot blocker extraordinaire Manute Bol. He fell in the draft pretty far. Again, this, you have to understand that, you have to understand something here, okay? At the draft, Bol Bol was wearing a suit with like a spider web on it. And he's a 7'2" giant. Okay, now try and picture that, okay? You have a 7'2" gigantic man wearing a spider web suit. And imagine him. And so I again, me impersonating Woj, I decided to say, all right. And while he was free-falling in the draft, I said, you know, Bol Bol, again, impersonating Woj, I said, Bol Bol just left the green room in tears crying. And about 5 or 6 verified accounts fell for it. Now, try and picture a 7'2" man wearing a suit with a spider web on it, running out of a room crying. Just try and picture that. Okay? And that's what happened. And people fell for it again. Jesus fucking Christ, do you not check handles? I mean, there's a reason. Twitter has check marks, blue verified check marks for a reason. It's so people don't fall for it, but people are so eager and anxious to be the first to break a story or to get on top of something before anybody else does. They just don't give a shit and they fall for it, and it's hilarious every single time. It will never stop being funny. I don't care. And it's even funnier when after I fool them, they recognize that they've been fooled. They get mad at me. Like, how dare you impersonate? You're just a loser. You're a phony. No, fuck you, pal. How about you try looking at a fucking screen name? It takes less than half a second to do it. So suck my balls, okay? It'll never stop being funny. And I also made a tweet about how Bol Bol fell in the draft because he was farting during draft combine interviews. And again, some more people fell for it. Just, I'm getting to the point now where I'm a little bit worried that I'm trying to figure out, like, what's the farthest that I can go to make stuff, like, that on the surface sounds completely stupid, but it's still somewhat vaguely believable that people will fall for it. And really, the last week or so has been just perfect, just completely perfect, where this is really, I'm in my 2013 LeBron stage right now, where I'm just at the peak of my powers, and nothing can stop me. But I don't want to sound like I'm getting too much of a big head. I'm just trying to find things to talk about, because I'm going to be honest, the two sports that I follow the most are the NFL and the NBA. And right now, neither of those are in season. So really the main sport right now is baseball. And I love playoff baseball, but regular season baseball is just so fucking boring. It's so long and it's so drawn out. And so much of, it's just, like I said, it's just so boring and there's not a lot of excitement. It's 162 games. We're in the middle of that. And this has always been the worst time of the sports year for, you know, people like me who really follow the NBA and the NFL. I know in a week or so, free agency will, you know, once free agency starts in a week or so, some of the excitement will come back in terms of the NBA free agency. But yeah, this is always the worst time. So it's hard to try and find topics to talk about because, admittedly, I'm not nearly as knowledgeable about sports like baseball than I am about the NFL, the NBA. But I do know a decent bit about, I do know a little bit about baseball. I'm not completely oblivious. I don't follow hockey at all or any shit like that. I don't follow it, but I mean, I watch baseball, so I know a little bit about baseball. And I know that really one of the concerns with, well, I'll tell you what I think the biggest problem with baseball is that its best player, Mike Trout, has the personality of a dead raccoon. Like, he just has, he's one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And like, He listens to J. Cole to get excited, to get pumped up for games. He goes home and he watches C-SPAN. Like, he's just the most boring superstar of all time. And for Mike Trout, that's great because he can go anywhere. He can go to a restaurant and most people won't even recognize him. So for him, it's great. But, like, if he had the personality of a Bryce Harper, an abrasive, brash, cocky personality, baseball would be so much better. Because the other thing that baseball, I think, suffers from is just the lack of personalities that are interesting. Like, the NBA is full of drama, and people complain about that, but that's also what gets talked about a lot. Like, people hate LeBron for being a quote-unquote drama queen or whatever. But, you know, all that drama and all that extracurricular shit that goes on, that's what that creates storylines. And for baseball, there's really not much of that. Like, Bryce Harper gets a little bit of that, but he's basically like a one-year wonder, or like a one-and-a-half-year wonder. He's sucks. This year, he's been horrible. Again, for like the second straight year, he's been horrible. And, you know, this is where, like, all the, you know, there's so many, I guess, a casual fan. Look, if you're a hardcore baseball fan, you're going to watch baseball no matter what. But for a casual fan, it's like outside of maybe your regional market, there's like no incentive, I guess, to watch other teams. And this has been baseball's problem for a while, is that, like, if you're a Yankees fan like I am, you'll watch the Yankees because they're in your market, but, like, do you give a shit about the Seattle Mariners? No. Like, are you going to go out of your way to watch a 9-inning game between two teams that aren't your team in the regular season? No. Unless you're a hardcore baseball fan. And I think that's just the nature of the game, where it's longer, it's drawn out more, as opposed to football and basketball, which are very more high, fast-paced, nonstop action. That's baseball's biggest problem. I mean, you can, and it doesn't help that, you know, there's all the anal, you know, policing of bat flipping and shit like that. Who gives a shit? I think that's good for the game because it provides some sort of excitement, as opposed to just, you know, watching pitchers stand on the mound grabbing their nuts for, you know, 30 minutes in between every pitch. You know, and people are complaining about, oh, the increase in home runs are bad for the game. No, it's not. No, it's not. I think the increase in home runs is good. I don't give a shit if they juice the ball. I don't care about that. But I think, you know, they can try and speed up pitchers with the pitching clock and things like that. But at the end of the day, I think baseball's fundamental problem is that it's just, in the regular season, it's just a boring sport. That's the cold hard facts. It's just a boring sport. It's not nearly as exciting and fast paced as baseball or football, as a football or basketball, excuse me. So that's my two cents on the entire baseball situation. I'm going to try and switch gears here to some non-sports topics. Oh, wait, before I go to non-sports, I just want to say that, okay, there's this, it seems like every year, some former teammate of Michael Jordan comes out on national television, and it's usually Dennis Rodman, who is so fucking beyond repair when it comes to mental issues. He's legitimately crazy. They, like, have Dennis Rodman on some show, and he comes out, and he's like, Michael Jordan out 50 in today's game. And it's just like, shut the fuck up, Dennis. And then the thing is that Michael Jordan, his fans and his stans are so, like, brainwashed and devoted to him that they run with it. And they're like, yeah, Michael Jordan would average 50 in today's game. No, he wouldn't. No, he wouldn't. And if by some miracle of God that he did average 50 in today's game, if he played in today's game, his team would suck ass because he'd be taking up so many possessions. Okay? Like, you're telling me that a guy who at most averaged 37 points in a season against far inferior athletes, against man-to-man defenses without zone defenses, you're telling me, and basically at the same exact pace as the game is played now. So that excuse that, oh, it's faster paced nowadays. No. And there were also more free throw attempts per game back in MJ's day than there are now. So the free throw excuse and the pace excuse, that's bullshit. So again, Like Michael Jordan was plenty good enough on his own. Like, his resume stands on its own without people coming out and exaggerating it and making it seem like, you know, he was, you know, he's this, like, super infallible figure that never lost a game or never missed a shot. Like, that's just, look, again, I'm the biggest LeBron fan in the world, but in 20 years, I'm not going to come out and say LeBron could have averaged a 60-point triple-double in today's era, you know, in 2040. Like, that's not going to happen. That's what people sound like when they say Michael Jordan would average 50 in today's game. So just shut the fuck up. And, it's, you know, using Dennis Rodman, and Dennis Rodman is the same guy who said, like, LeBron would be average back in the 80s and 90s. Like, you're using a guy who is best friends with an evil dictator in North Korea to base your opinions off of. I mean, give me a fucking break. People hate LeBron that much. You're that insecure about LeBron that you're going to side with Dennis Rodman? Really? Really? You're going to do that? Come on. Be better than that. You know, I know you don't like LeBron. I know you're insecure about LeBron threatening MJ's status as the greatest player of all time. But come on, be real. Make a better argument than that shit besides siding with Dennis Rodman. Anyway, let's go to some non-sports topics. And in the last week or so, I've been rewatching the Terminator movies, and specifically the original Terminator and Terminator 2. And I've seen these movies hundreds of times. They're great movies. They're all-time great films. One of the things, though, that finally really dawned on me for the first time ever was I was watching the original Terminator, and after it was over, everybody who's seen it knows how it ends. It ends with the Terminator chasing Sarah Connor in that abandoned factory, and Sarah Connor ends up crushing it. And Kyle Reese, the guy who was sent back in time to protect Sarah, gets killed. And it finally dawned on me. I was like, what if the Terminator actually succeeded in killing Sarah Connor? I'm not talking about before it got, like, destroyed. I'm talking about, let's say, in the nightclub scene, in that tech-noir scene, everybody knows what I'm talking about, like, where Arnold goes up to Sarah with the laser pointer gun. Like, let's say, instead of getting interrupted like he was in the film, let's say he shoots Sarah in the head, kills her, and then he kills Kyle Reese. Like, what does he do then? What exactly was his prerogative then? Like, here he is, he's a guy, like, he's literally basically Arnold Schwarzenegger, except he's an unkillable, you know, except he's a killing machine. Like, is he just gonna, does he just wait around L.A. for the next 25, 30 years? And the paradox is that, like, does he get caught for, you know, like, what does he do? Does he just go hide in a cave for the next 25, 30 years? Does he go and hunt other people? Like, that's one of the most interesting what-if scenarios that I'd never thought about before. And finally, on, like, my 70th watch of The Terminator, I was thinking of this possibility. And the other thing that's interesting is that John Connor, in the future, sent back a guy to have premarital sex with his mom so that he would be born. I mean, that's fucked up. That is really fucked up. Like, you just, hey, man, I need you to go back in time to have sex with my mom. That's just, ugh, that's disgusting. Maybe Skynet is the good guy. All right, we're talking about the Terminators being bad. Maybe Skynet is the good guy. All right, he's anti-premarital sex, just like Jason Voorhees, just like Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger. They all hate premarital sex. Maybe we, as a community, have to start talking about these guys like they're the good guys instead of the villains, because they're anti-premarital sex and anti-drugs. And that was one of my biggest takeaways from rewatching The Terminator. And Terminator 2 was another great film. My one issue with Terminator 2 is, and it was really a perfect film, my one issue is at the end where they're in that factory or whatever, and the T-1000, you know, the liquid guy who can change shapes, and, you know, that's really fucking badass. He has Sarah Connor, who is, like, you know, who's already injured, and he's going after John Connor because he's trying to kill John Connor. Like, and he has Sarah Connor, like, and he turns his finger into, like, a knife. Anybody who's seen Terminator 2 knows what I'm talking about, the scene I'm talking about. And he's like, call John. And for me, it's like, why not just kill Sarah Connor? Because you can literally transform into any person you want, any person that you come into contact with. So instead of sparing Sarah Connor, like, why not just kill her and impersonate her and try and fool John. Like, that was plot armor that was annoying to me. That was fairly obvious. But overall, that was a really, really good film. Really a great film. An all-time great science fiction film. An all-time great action film. I view the first Terminator as a lot more... I view it as a lot more horror. The second film is a lot more action. The third film is more like comedy parody almost. But here's another thing I have to go back to about the original Terminator. In the hypothetical situation that the Terminator succeeded in killing Sarah Connor and Kyle Reese, like, here's the thing. The reason that Skynet in the first place even became into existence is because at the end of the original Terminator, and this is going to get a little bit confusing, I know, but try and stay with me. At the end of the original Terminator, when Sarah Connor killed the Terminator, they took the microprocessor from the original Terminator and they hid it in Cyberdyne, and they reverse engineer it to come up with, you know, all this advanced technology. And from there, like, the defense systems and Skynet were created. But in this hypothetical situation where the Terminator succeeds in killing Sarah Connor and he's never caught and his microprocessor is never found and reverse engineered, would Skynet even exist in the first place? So by sending a Terminator back in time to kill Sarah Connor, wouldn't Skynet be risking its own existence? Like, this is where you can get really, really mind-fucked. And that's where I'm going here. And it's one of those things where, like, it's interesting to think about, at least for me. I really, really enjoyed it. But really, I really love those mid-80s, you know, late 80s science fiction films like Terminator and RoboCop, because there's such a visceral, raw, like, the CGI, all, you know, so much CGI, like, it for me, it doesn't fit as well with science fiction films, at least with films that involve, you know, robot humanoids like the Terminator and RoboCop. Like, you watch, you know, the original Terminator and there's a raw, visceral feeling to it, especially the flashback scenes where Kyle Reese is in, you know, he's hiding, and then a Terminator infiltrates the hiding spot, and, you know, the Terminator, like, turns on a machine gun and starts killing people. Like, that was real and raw. Whereas you go and you look at, like, Terminator 3 or Terminator Genesis, and there's so much CGI, it looks pretty, but, like, it doesn't, there's not, like, the raw feel that really captures a sense of doom. And it's the same thing with RoboCop, where in the original RoboCop, there was just so much, like, raw blood and guts, and you really got a sense that this is, it's in old Detroit, and it's really, you know, grimy, and it's dirty, and all that shit. Like, you felt that from watching it. And I just want to go on record by saying that the original RoboCop is probably, like, the greatest film of all time, because I can sit down and watch that shit for 2 hours straight, and it doesn't matter how many times I've seen it, I can sit and watch it nonstop for 2 hours straight, no matter what I'm doing. If I see it on TV, bam, I'm watching it. That's it. Like, no other questions asked. I'm watching it, and I can enjoy it every single time. And anybody who's seen the original, like, the original RoboCop, unlike Terminator and Terminator 2, the original RoboCop is head and shoulders above any other film in the series. Although I will say that the RoboCop remake that they made back in 2014, I was expecting it to be bad. I thought it was good. I mean, it wasn't the original, but it was different, and I thought it was a good film. I thought on its own, as a standalone film, I thought the remake RoboCop, I think it was in, like, 2014 or whatever, I thought that was a good film. But I think the original RoboCop, the dark humor in it, the villain, you know, Clarence Boddicker, Dick Jones, just all of that. It was just so Bob Morton, you know, getting killed at his house with strippers and hookers, getting blown up. Just all of it was just so fucking cool, and I love that. And, you know, the guy at the end, Emil, the villain who got, you know, dumped in a vat of toxic waste, and he comes out, and he's like, his skin's melting off, and Clarence gets hit and run over by a car. I mean, it's just so fucking awesome. And I really wish they made more movies like that nowadays. where there's less CGI, and I hate to sound like an old head, but where there's just less CGI and there's just more like raw props, and it just gives a more visceral, realistic feeling. I know I sound like a complete fucking dork for people who don't watch science fiction films, but growing up, that was really what I watched a lot of. I watched a lot of horror films, I watched a lot of science fiction films. Surprisingly, though, I never really became a Star Trek fan. It seems to me like you're either Star Wars or Star Trek. And for me, I was a Star Wars guy. And, I think I could make an entire episode just on Star Wars. Just my opinion on the Star Wars films. That could be an entire episode. But, I think I'm running out of time for this episode to talk about all that shit. But, I think coming up with topics, I spent a lot of time discussing non-sports stuff in this episode. But hey, you know what? Like I talked about before, there's no NFL or NBA on. Free agency hasn't started yet. You know, mini camps and training camps haven't started yet. We're right in the most boring part of the baseball season. So, hey, I'm trying to come up with shit to talk about. But, you know, man boob gate. Is something that I'll never forget. I don't think anybody else who follows me will ever forget. The fact that I have almost 240,000 followers right now is just mind blowing to me. I never expected that I would get this big of a following. So I would thank everybody for following me. Whether you hate me or love me, thank you for following me. Just remember that Cardi B is a rapist, and that Tom Brady has a worse career playoff passer rating than Blake Bortles. Stay classy and respect the troops.